Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
All right, back on the show, Joe Zagacki with you until 8 o'clock. Thanks to Coach L joining us in hour number one. Good review of Miami and Duke and Miami and Florida State. Jeff Borzello from ESPN joins us now, ESPN College Basketball Insider. Jeff, thanks for being with us. How are you doing tonight?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Let me start with the University of Miami before we go to make it more broad and go national. Your thoughts on the University of Miami hard-fought game against Duke. Came up short at Cameron, ran Florida State out of the gym last night.
They've surprised me, you know, overall for the course of the year, and I think that they're pretty clearly the, you know, second best team in the ACC from a resume perspective, from a, you know, eye test perspective, over the course of the 3 months of the season. You know, I think they're in really good shape moving forward resume wise. You know, they have the four quad one wins. They've already beaten Virginia. They don't have to play them again. They get another chance at Duke at home, and so I just think that they're really well positioned to get, you know, probably a 5-6 seed right now, probably a 5 if I had to, you know, make a bracket today. They have the non-conference win over Rutgers. I just think that they've built up their resume pretty well. And that's the ACC. There's not a lot of teams in the league that can say that right now because it's pretty competitive top to bottom, but there's just not a ton of chances for, you know, resume boosting wins. And they did a lot of their work in the non-league with the Rutgers win, as I mentioned, with the win over Providence, which looks better every week. And so just from a resume perspective, I think they're in good shape. And I think, you know, on the floor, they're getting better. I think Nigel Pack shooting the ball well over the last few weeks has been big. Isaiah Wong, obviously a little bit inconsistent, but I think he had a big bounce back last night. I mean, there was a point in December where, you know, I don't think there was a guard in the country playing better basketball than him. And so when you have him going, you have Nigel Pack going, and you have Norshad Omir on the inside, you know, I just think that their first five is as good as, you know, probably anybody outside of the elite teams in the country. And so I like their chances to have a pretty good seed come March. And again, I think the way that they play, as we saw last year, they're built to win a couple of games in the tournament.
Coach L, Jim Larrañaga, I've been around him for 12 years, and I just think you'd be hard-pressed to find too many coaches that are better than Jim Larrañaga, especially when it comes to game day. Game day and game day adjustments and just somebody who sees the game. I think the guy is at the top of the game.
Yeah, and I think that one of the good things about him, I mean, he knows what Miami's weakness is. And it's been the same thing for like 5-6 years now. You know, they don't rebound very well defensively. He's okay with that. You know, he doesn't try to – he's comfortable in his own skin. He's comfortable saying, okay, we're going to be smaller than most teams we play. We're going to get – you know, we're going to give up a couple of second chances, but, you know, we're going to do things at the other end of the floor. We're going to force turnovers defensively. We're going to make threes. We're going to get to the rim. We're going to create matchup problems with our smaller lineups, and it's going to outweigh whatever they get in terms of second chance opportunities. You know, he hasn't gone out and said, hey, we got to go 6'10", 6'10", 6'8", across the front line. This is how I want to play. This is how I think we can win. And he's done it, like I said, the last 5 or 6 years, and it's worked. And I just – it's – I commend him for kind of sticking to that and saying, this is my philosophy. This is how I want to win. Let's do it again.
You might laugh at this, but do you think the basketball gurus are okay with Miami being good in basketball?
I think they are. I think some of the NIL drama last spring might have I guess, dissuaded some of them from being okay with Miami being good. But, no, I think Jim Larranaga is very well liked. I think Miami plays a really fun style of basketball. I think a lot of people were impressed with the way they were in the tournament last season. And so, yeah, I think people are okay. I think they're warming up to the idea of Miami being consistently good in basketball.
Okay. All right. Well, I know you're able to slide the NIL thing in there, but it's everywhere. It's everywhere now. It's not just here. It's everywhere.
It is.
We got to go up against Bankai here.
Yeah, Miami just happened to be the most public at first, you know, early on, and now it's.
I understand.
They just seem to. But hey, it's good. I mean, there's a lot of teams playing catch up now, and I think that Miami as a whole, the athletic department did a really good job of getting out ahead of it.
But by the way, along those lines, I don't know how college basketball and college football sustain this model. I mean, something's got to give, right?
Yeah, I mean, I just, and it's kind of been the question since it kind of got enacted is when is the return on investment not going to be there? Some of the numbers that you hear for some of these guys, it's just crazy. And, you know, I don't know if that, you know, they're worth some of the money that they're being paid. Now, I'm glad that college athletes or student athletes are getting paid for what they do now. That's fine. I just think at some point, some of the bigger spenders are going to say, hey, this is just not worth it, and maybe pull back a little bit. And we've seen some programs go through some lulls this season, and there's been some locker room drama and things like that, and, you know, finger pointing when certain guys are getting more money than others. And it's just, you know, there are some issues that have come up with it. I think that it was pretty predictable that this would happen, but now we're kind of seeing it play out. And so I think that, and the NCAA still does not seem to have a clear hold or a clear handle on what they want NIL to be. And they're waiting for, you know, Congress to make decisions and states to make decisions and things like that. And so I think that there's still a lot of fine tuning to be done. But hey, I think that this is kind of what people wanted. They wanted this kind of free-ish market, you know, guys can go in the portal and see what they're worth, things like that. And it's kind of really, really difficult to put the toothpaste back in the tube, so to say.
Yeah. Well, I just had this conversation in the last hour on Coach L's show that one of the toughest things to do for a coach is build a team. I mean, a team that plays together as a team. And it starts with, you look at kids today in the youth leagues, everything's a showcase tournament. And, you know, they play a showcase tournament to get to a better AAU team. They play showcase tournaments to go from AAU to get a better position maybe in college. And when they get to college, are they looking at it as it's a showcase tournament to get to the NBA? And that's a challenge for the coaches. Then on top of it, you throw money or NIL.
Yeah, and I think that the other thing is that everything is sort of a one-year model now. Look back 10 years ago, you know, Iowa State under Fred Hoiberg, when he first came back to college, they were getting all these transfers. It was looked at as some sort of renegade program. And, you know, how are they doing this? Why are they getting so many transfers? This is not the way to build a team. And now if you're not playing, you know, if you're not building your roster on a 1-2 year basis, you're going to struggle. And, you know, I went through probably 150 freshmen in the country a few weeks ago. I think outside of the five-star guys, there was maybe seven or eight guys averaging double figures in points, which is incredibly low compared to other years. And it's just, you know, coaches now, they say, all right, I need to win next year. I need to win soon. I'm not going to go out and try to get four or five freshmen. I need four or five guys from the portal that can play for me right now. I know they can produce. I know that what they've done in college, I trust that more than the number 78 freshman who might take a year and a half to really make an impact. It's just, you know, the trust now is way more for experienced guys from the portal. And it's just, there's really no time for a 4-year rebuild anymore.
Jeff Borzello from ESPN is our guest talking college basketball. For a second, let's talk high school basketball. You have up on ESPN.com scouting the 2023 McDonald's All-Americans. And one of those McDonald's All-Americans, his last name is James. And his first name is Bronny. And he's got some pretty good offers.
He's good enough. He's good enough. He is good enough to be a McDonald's All-American. I know that's been kind of the backlash. It's like, oh, he's only in because of his dad. I honestly think that it's gotten to the point where he's underrated. He is a legitimate top 30-ish prospect in the country. You know, I think early in high school he was, you know, I mean, he came into high school with just outlandish expectations because of who his father is. And it's been impressive to me that he's been able to, you know, he doesn't have the insane athleticism or shooting ability or the power and the strength that his father does. But, you know, early in his high school career, when he was one of the younger players playing with other highly ranked players, he was fine being a glue guy, a role player, making shots, playing defense. He's still really good at making shots in the perimeter. He's an elite defender, but now he's added things to his game. He's developed his game. He's improved to the point where, yeah, I mean, is he a surefire top 20 prospect in the class? No. But for him to be McDonald's All-American, I don't think it's crazy. I think he's right in that conversation, and I think he's legitimately one of the better two-way offense-defense guards in the class.
He's got some great offers, so you think? I guess he'll go to college, right? He's not a guy that skips college and goes right to the NBA, is he?
Well, I mean, his options right now would be, if he didn't want to go to college, would be the G League or Overtime Elite. Yeah. I think his dad wants to play with him before he retires. And so that would, you know, he would spend his 1 year likely in college unless he wants to go to one of these other alternate paths and then go to the NBA. And, you know, he's not a clear cut one and done guy on paper, but he is Bronny James. And if LeBron says, hey, I want to play with my son, I'll sign with you for a year if you draft him. Hey, that's right. You know, that's a scenario that some teams would have to weigh. But, no, he's a legitimate prospect in his own right. I think he'll contribute year one right away in college. And like you said, he's got schools, you know, Oregon, you know, he would play at Oregon. He would play at USC. He would play at, you know, Ohio State's the only kind of known visit he's taken. He took an unofficial there. You know, he would play year one at all these places. And like I said, I think it's gotten to the point where people are saying, oh, he's only doing this because of his dad, whatever. He's a legitimate player in his own right, and he would be an impact freshman next season.
You have a piece up on Dan Hurley. Miami played UConn a couple years ago. He's very demonstrative on the sidelines. What did you find that was so interesting about Dan Hurley? It's a very interesting family.
It is, and, you know, the sideline antics are not unique to him in terms of the Hurley family. I mean, obviously his brother Bobby at Arizona State is like that. Their father, Bob, one of the greatest high school coaches in history, was like that at St. Anthony, New Jersey. And what I found fascinating is over the past decade, the sideline stuff has not really stopped in terms of him going at referees and things like that. But off the court, he is nothing like you would see on the sideline. And, you know, he was telling me that there was a moment, you know, I guess 10 years ago when he was at Wagner, that he just could not – he was almost paralyzed from the idea of losing. He would almost prevent him from doing anything during the day. You know, he told me he was hiding under his desk 90 minutes before a game at Wagner. You know, he was just so, you know, unable to operate, just so paranoid about losing. He said, if it keeps going like this, I was going to give it up. I was going to retire. He said he's had no joy. He found no joy in coaching. And he said he called Billy Donovan, and he said, hey, man, I'm melting down. Like, help me out. What can I do? And he said he started, you know, reading, you know, started meditating. He started reading books, motivational books, things like that. You know, he got into a routine that allowed him to kind of deal with losses a lot better. And now, you know, when I went there, they were coming off a 2-game losing streak, and he was fine with it, but he was, you know, off the court, he's very mild mannered. He's kind of always been that way, but now he just absorbs and deals with the wins and losses a lot better. He's able to kind of separate his kind of on-court persona to his off-court persona, his at-practice persona to his at-home persona. So it's just the self-improvement, the awareness to say, hey, I have to change. I can't do this. You know, I can't keep coaching this way. I just thought that was really impressive.
Now, I always think that's why a college coach would have a tough time. Now, Billy Donovan's been able to do it, going from college to the NBA. It's the losing.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, it's – college coaches have control over everything in their program, you know, recruiting and, you know, marketing. And a lot of these guys want their hands in every single thing that goes on in programs. They want to kind of micromanage things. That's just how they're wired. And the NBA, it's not like that. You go, you coach your guys. The front office does the free agency, the draft. You know, you go to practice and, you know, you don't have that connection with the guys that you do in college. It's just not the same. And so I think for a lot of college coaches who like doing that, that want to be part of every second of everything that goes on in their program, it's just really difficult to adjust to the NBA style of coaching.
I don't know if this story is under the radar or not, but I want to ask you about this particular player. And for 2 weeks, the country kind of captivated by DeMar Hamlin. Keontae Johnson had a heart cardiac situation for the Gators against Florida State and sat out the year, was rescued on the court. A cardiologist jumped out of the stands to rescue him in Tallahassee during the COVID year. And I don't know if many people remember that, but he's playing at a very high level now for Kansas State.
Yeah, I mean, he's third in the Big 12 in scoring, third in rebounding. It's funny, I actually talked to Jerome Tang, the head coach of Kansas State, earlier tonight, and I said, you know, what kind of convinced you to take a risk on a guy who had not played in 2 years? And he, while he was at Baylor, he coached, you know, guys like Jared Butler and other players that had heart issues that came back and were able to perform. And so he didn't really have any concern about that once Keontae was cleared to play. But, I mean, I don't think anyone thought that he would get back to the form he showed at Florida when he was SEC preseason player of the year before that season. But he's been unbelievable, and he's gotten better. You know, it's almost like the time off, the time watching games maybe allowed him to see, you know, what he was doing wrong, what he could pick up. But he's been unbelievable. Kansas State's been the biggest surprise team in the country. You know, picked 10th last place in the Big 12 in the preseason, up to number 5 in the country, despite Tuesday's loss to Iowa State. But yeah, it's a really, I mean, like you said, I mean, it's almost flown under the radar given how kind of crazy and heartwarming, I guess, it is that he's playing this well 2 years after collapsing on the court and doing nothing basketball wise since then to return to his, you know, his 2020 form before he collapsed.
Yeah. Well, the University of Miami made a great run last year. They were a writer's dream, I think, because their press conferences were great. So I'm hopeful they'll make another great run this year. Plus, I hate losing as well, like Danny Hurley. But you've been a great guest, Jeff. Thank you for being with us, and we'll see what happens with the University of Miami. And hopefully, we can talk with you on our show again.
That sounds great. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, Jeff Borzello joining us from ESPN, ESPN College Basketball Insider. I'm an insider on automobiles. I'm an insider when it comes to Williamson Buick GMC. And what I can tell you is new Buicks are arriving daily at Williamson. And what does that mean for you? Well, because I'm an insider, I can tell you that the new Buick Encore, a 5-person SUV with a style, performance, and technology that's perfectly sized to handle whatever life throws at you, is available right now. As an insider at Williamson, I can tell you the new Buick Enclave with an exciting new look that brings together the idea of a family vehicle and luxury. To get your new Buick, visit Williamson's beautiful facility, conveniently located on US 1 and 104th Street, just south of the Palmetto, or online at WilliamsonAutomotiveGroup.com. Get the most out of the South Florida lifestyle and experience the new Buick from your premier Buick dealership, Williamson Buick GMC. Williamson is Miami.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.